This is an example of speech.
All our history of broiling wars ain't deep on even.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge. Thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blow hard evergreen topical heatwave of a weekly conversation, turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment sections in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at Green_Weird, which is W-Y-R-D. This episode, we have weak thoughts about racist cops in Florida and Sinclair Broadcasting, middling thoughts on our national buffoon's European vacation, and closing thoughts about Governor Walker and how he's hashtag embarrassing Wisconsin lately. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Charles and I would like to add, would like to dedicate this episode to our legal correspondent Dave's newborn daughter. Can't be happier for him and his wife. Can't wait to have the little drunkalocetus on the podcast someday to talk about the symbolic politics of playpens, or how babysitters are the tools of the patriarchy. Again, congratulations to some of our favorite people around. Now, it's time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now for some weak thoughts.
Housemaid from those who are never on the airwaves, the countless faceless horde of white slaves, bloody wars, water control of oil, as Eritrea in Ethiopia boil, it's no surprise that we have a face.
So, welcome everybody to Tell Me What to Think. This is the Weak Thoughts segment. You can email the podcast at tmwttpod@gmail.com. You can use the hashtag TMWTT to alert us to important news stories, or unimportant news stories, or just, you know, no, don't use that hashtag for unimportant things, like you got a hamburger at a restaurant or something. You can find me on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis. You can find Charles at Green_Weird, W-Y-R-D. You can like our Facebook page, and you can find the podcast at www.stoneduckmedia.com and on a number of the normal places you find podcasts. All right, so later on in the show, we're going to get to the giant treasonous elephant in the room. I'm using treasonous a little tongue-in-cheek there.
I mean, that I would also be say you're using elephant tongue-in-cheek, too.
Well, they're Republicans. That's the only reason I said that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... I don't know, though. I mean, Trump is a metaphorical elephant in the room. Kind of, I mean...
Yeah. Can you imagine what would happen if Eisenhower could be teleported from the past to, like... to the White House now? You call yourself a Republican?
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to have, like a Republican Mount Rushmore come back, like Lincoln, T.R., and probably Eisenhower, and then...
Nixon, I guess? Oh, even Nixon.
I mean, Nixon would probably be... I think he would kind of get it. To be honest, I think he kind of would get Trump. I think he would probably dislike him. And he would, I think, definitely disagree on, like, actual policy.
Yeah, right? I mean, look at how much Nixon's legacy is just kind of throwing up and burning in so much garbage, like the EPA.
Oh, and his legacy as the most corrupt president ever is,
right?
It's like
reaching for that brass ring.
The good and bad of Nixon are just, you know, he's gonna lose his first place status in so many categories.
You know, and maybe Reagan would be even a little like, you know, a little bit like, what the fuck is this guy doing? But I mean, Lincoln and TR alone would be a 1-2 combo that you wouldn't want to fuck with. I mean,
yeah.
Lincoln would be like, those two could beat the shit out of Trump. So like, physically, individually, they are outmatch him.
With Eisenhower just standing to the side watching it.
Yeah. And you know, like, you know, Teddy Roosevelt would he's like a smart Trump in some ways. And I'm using the Trump in like the nicest, you know, charismatic, pompous
a little bit. Controversial.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I've widely seen, you know, Roosevelt described as just like incredibly intelligent, writing books, constantly reading books. He was like a speed reader or something.
Oh man.
Yeah, he was like, and then Lincoln, of course, is, you know, the legend. I mean, right. Have you seen some of the comments Trump makes on, like, he's like, there was a poll recently where they asked people who the greatest Republican president of all time is. I was number one in the poll to Lincoln. Can you believe that? I'm better than Lincoln.
I literally do not believe that.
Yeah, but I mean, the ignorance of the present day is no, that's nothing someone in his position should be, like, talking about. Like, I'm sure we could have come up with some stupid poll that would have put Obama as the number one president of all time during his presidency somewhere, and, you know, like, Obama wouldn't have been, like, out at a speech saying that. You know, he has a respect for history and, like, American legends. And
some internal check on his own ego so he doesn't just run rampant.
Yeah, and it's like, in general, you would say presidents are incredibly egotistical.
Oh, yeah, I mean, even Obama in some respects.
Oh, yeah. No, he was, I think he had a classiness to that ego, but, I mean, he had an ego. I think he's even talked about having an ego before. Like, I think he's publicly spoken about, again, something Trump, like, wouldn't, like, he wouldn't talk about being egotistical in a humble fashion.
No.
It's like, that's too nuanced and complex for him.
I'm the most un-egotistical. I don't understand. Yes.
He'd, like, yeah, say in one breath he has the greatest ego of all time, and then in the next say he's the most humble person of all time.
I give so much to charity. Well,
I also take so much from charity. yeah, so, anyway, we'll get more into that later.
So what's up with the Brewers?
So, my beloved Brewers, we're going to the All-Star break. I believe the home run derby was, like, last night or something. And I feel like it's a week late. Oftentimes my birthday, which is last week, is on the day of the home run derby or the All-Star game. Anyways, it's the All-Star break, which is a little bit past the halfway point in the season. The Brewers have been in first place since, I don't remember exactly, but a few weeks or so into the season until just this past week, I believe. They got swept in a five... God damn it, my dryer. You done? You done over there? Okay. They got swept by the Pittsburgh Pirates in five games, which I think they only had a five-game series, maybe because of a doubleheader, because of a rainout earlier in the year. And so that's highly unusual. It was the first five-game sweep in Major League Baseball in, like, 12 years or something like that.
Oh, man.
But again, there aren't even many five-game series, like, in a season, like, at all. They don't normally schedule that. They don't try and schedule that. Anyway, they're fine. They're fine. They got Jesus Aguilar, who won the fan vote. He didn't win the fan vote. He wasn't on the ballot for the main All-Star vote because it's really stupid. Okay, talk about, like, real-world election problems and, like, ballot problems. Major League Baseball has this thing where the fans vote on the All-Star game. And they kind of encourage you to, like, vote a lot. It's kind of interesting. I think when they first did this, there were people who would, like, abuse it and, like, set up bots or something to, like, vote constantly. Or they would just literally sit there and vote because they were, like, insane fans.
Right. Has shown phones?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I was just thinking early days of the internet, too. I mean, not even early, you know, like 2003 or something like that.
I could see, yeah.
Yeah, and so, anyway, they now, it's like something like you can vote, I want to say you can vote like 25 times a day if you want. But then they put a hard cap on it, and they try and, you have to like sign in and everything. It's not just an anonymous vote. Anyway, so the way they do it, though, is it's like essentially the starting rosters from the beginning of the season. Even though you can't vote like right away. You vote early, but not like right away. And, you know, yeah, it's hard to determine exactly who the starter is by the time the voting comes up. But it's like they don't even like go back and try to make it a more accurate ballot. Like, clearly this guy was All-Star caliber and the Brewers' first baseman by the time the ballot was put online, and he wasn't on it because he wasn't the beginning of the year starter for the Brewers. And so anyways, so he wasn't in that, and you can't write in people, but after that like election is done, they take the top kind of their top five players who didn't make it. And you get fans get to vote on them over the course of like a week. And he won that. I believe handedly, but I could be corrected on that. Because he's fucking awesome. And he's amazing this year. And so the Brewers, like, their main problem is that they almost have like too many good players right now. So there's a lot of like switching in and out and moving players around. And I think that'll just shake out over the second half of the year. They have like to start the, like, their top two or three pitchers are injured, starting pitchers.
Oh, wow. That's rough.
And I believe they're all expected to be back soon. So, and not that their pitching isn't even really that bad anyway. So.
We had to go further down the All-Star roster to the next pitcher?
Well, not.
Not exactly.
I'm not talking about the All-Star roster.
No, I know, but the Brewers roster.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The number of All-Stars on the pitching squad.
Yeah, I don't think they have any All-Star pitchers, to be honest. I think they have the best... Go ahead.
I was going to say, we have one of the best records in baseball, though. It's been almost all year.
No, and they're still really good. They're just a couple games back of the Cubs, and I'm not too worried. I mean, the main issue will be that the Cubs will probably trade for a player because they have, you know, a lot of resources that will fill a hole on their roster. And the Brewers may not be able to do that or may not want to do that because they still are theoretically ahead of their schedule for being good. When this all started, they were supposed to be good in 2019. And they were good last year, though they didn't make the playoffs. And then they kind of were like, okay, well, hey, maybe let's move it up a year. We'll be great in 2018. And they have been. Goddamn dryer. Stupid dryer. Anyway, that was probably the buzzer on
that segment.
Brewer talk. Wait. Get in my mind. I cannot come up with a good segue between the Brewers and the racist Florida police chief.
I mean, what are you supposed to do about that? It's like if you were trying to build an awesome team, but only on paper, it's entirely terrible. This,
I'm going to need to pull this tweet up and...
It's Biscayne Park, Florida.
Biscayne Park, Florida.
And it involves... So the chief is Raimundo Ataziano? 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 I don't know. And along with actually two other officers, Raul Fernandez and Charlie Daub, were charged with falsely accusing a black Haitian American teenager with burglaries. And what kind of has emerged from this is that allegedly this chief was telling officers that he was encouraging that type of police work, quote unquote.
He was basically told them to pin any unresolved crimes on any African American that they could literally put their hands on. Yeah. And got up to like 100% clearance rate a couple of years.
So he abruptly resigned during the investigation in 2014 after a 2-year tenure with impressive crime stats. Only one of their 30 burglary cases had been unsolved, including 19 from the previous year. The year after his departure, not a single burglary case out of 19 was solved.
So what this tells me is that they were really leaning on that to do their jobs. And so think, like, what, tens if not hundreds of thousands of dollars it takes to train someone up to be a policeman, equipped in uniform to operate as a law enforcement officer in a designated community or jurisdiction. And instead of doing all of that work that they may or may not have actually been trained for, they just made it up. And now literally can't do their jobs. And so all of that money is just wasted.
Oh, and think, okay, so it means kind of two bad things. Like
all I mean, that's like the asshole Republican version of why it's terrible.
We should be clear and not make assumptions. It's horribly racist.
horribly that seems racist. Completely obvious. It's illegal in its face, right?
And just immoral. I mean, you're even taking race out of it. I mean, it's just immoral to accuse innocent people that you actually know are innocent, right? Because you're just finding them.
Right.
Like, you're not solving the case. You're just finding someone to pin it on. So you know they're not the guilty party. That's totally immoral to knowingly accuse. That's framing. They're framing people.
Yeah.
And
framing people.
But what I was going to say is, so not only are there a bunch of burglars out there who have not been caught, charged, punished, there are presumably people who were caught, besides this kid, who actually was never formally charged. Because the state, I believe the state attorney's office dropped the charges or something.
Just think about all the cases that are now reopened or may or may not have to be reviewed or just going to be dismissed. So all that work, that even just the cost of those court proceedings.
Yes, and the integrity of those prosecutors.
Basically of the whole court, because, you know, the judge had to agree to probably what was a plea agreement, if I had to bet.
Well, and so now is there going to be, I mean, I can imagine some, beyond this person's case, people who had been convicted in the past, talking to defense attorneys to overturn those convictions, or maybe even some sort of, like, class action suit or something, I don't know. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's a giant nest of terrible that just gets worse.
I mean, this, like, it's there's, like, I mean, there's some bad stuff as well, like the language and culture of the place. I mean, maybe that's kind of obvious because they're doing these actions, but there's also apparently a captain, Lawrence Churchman, who was not indicted in this. They've denied all these allegations, but I mean, there was a former officer who was accusing them of regularly making racist and sexist comments. The captain has said on several different occasions, quote, the captain has said on several different occasions he doesn't want any N-words, F-words, or women B-words working at Biscayne Park.
Wow.
I mean, the Papa John's guy got in trouble for that. Not legal trouble.
Yeah. But... well, financial trouble, which is the worst kind.
Yeah. Although, I assume he, I mean, he still owns 30% of the company.
Right. Yeah, he's only phenomenally wealthy. Poor guy.
This culture of accusing people of being racist or sexist sometimes is just going too far.
I'm going to go cry in my mansion in Florida.
Actually, unless you had something else on this, we could kind of go into that Papa John's thing, because what I liked about that is that the company that they were working with essentially, like, ratted him out. And almost for more for their own integrity than to, like, get him in trouble or make news. Like, they sent out word to their staff saying, hey, we are done working with them, because a bunch of our people said all this shit was just said on a conference call by their chairman or whatever his position was.
I heard some kind of tale that it was some kind of racial sensitivity training, but that seems...
Yeah, it was. Unlikely. No, it was. It was.
Oh.
So, wow. And I haven't heard this defense, but when I read about it, I'm like, oh, so he was just play acting, but way over the top. And I don't know. It didn't say I don't recall reading the context into which he was saying it. But it was during some sort of, like, training or role play or something like that. But I think he just went, like, way too over the top. But what I've kind of read between the lines is that this isn't unusual for the guy. And because this was affecting their business with another company, I think it was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. Yeah.
Yeah. Now we have an actionable, legitimate reason that isn't coming from the company, so we can't fight it in court until it fucking dies.
Yeah.
And the company with it. So yeah, they really kind of moved away from him and his branding real quick, right?
Oh, it's super fast. I heard they're really
rewriting all their packaging.
Yeah, yeah. They did. Well, I guess he had already gotten into some hot water.
Like, he was removed as the CEO and was just chairman of the board, right, or something along those lines.
Yeah, and that was earlier in the year. And that was for saying something about black athletes kneeling or something.
Right, because it was saying it was affecting his pizza sales, when that almost certainly wasn't the case.
Yeah.
But it did afterwards, I bet. I'm not sure he said that.
You'd hope so.
That's like going out in public and being like, my pizza sucks, don't buy it. Especially you people. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say it like that.
It's like, to me... yeah, that stuff's bad and would get me to stop shopping there, purchasing from them. But also, their pizza is shitty, so it's a moot point for me personally.
Mm.
But maybe I'm just not a fan.
Maybe you're biased since dude was like, I can't afford to pay 19 cents a pie for my people to have health care. Or that's when we were done basically getting it. That was like years ago. Now that seems quaint by modern comparisons.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. Like, to me, the whole, what do they say? Name and shame. Naming and shaming.
Yeah.
It's a very positive development, even though it has a little bit of a... it has the tactics of nefarious activity, in a way.
Right? If you were naming people and shaming them for things that they didn't do, it would be a crime.
Well, or like, because it reminds me of, like, doxing, right? Isn't that called doxing?
Yeah. Well, yeah, doxing is kind of a specific form of that. That's where people, like, that, you know, they publish your personal information so that people can, you know, threaten you directly or dig up even more dirt about you.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in some of these things, I'm not trying to, like, put a bad spin on this thing that I think is fine. I'm just saying, it's interesting that it's like, using tactics, and maybe the tactics aren't inherently maybe the tactics aren't the problem. I don't know, but it's similar because like you see this video of like some dude yelling at a fucking whatever old white lady yelling at a black kid or whatever the video of the week is of some racist white person
from late the day at this point.
Yeah, and you know a lot of times people find out who that person is, their name, where they live, what their job is,
and they have in some cases been charged with crimes.
Yeah, rightfully so. And
well, they should.
And it's I don't know. It just to me, it's like using these tactics that have mostly been associated with bad things for good. And I think that's a positive development in the internet. It's really easy to focus on all the bad shit that you find online and in social media and communities online. And
yeah.
I don't know, it's one of the, you know, cell phone videos and all that.
But sometimes you get some good positive messages and information out of it.
Yeah.
Like, I never would have learned the word compromat. That's, yeah, I would bet that it's been added to the English language at this point, because we didn't really have a word for that. At best, we had two words, like compromising material.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know.
That's how loan words happen.
Yeah, I suppose. All right, and then what was the other thing I want to talk about in Weak Thoughts? Oh, FCC Chairman Ajit Pai announced that...
Serious concern?
Yes, serious concern.
Tell me more, please.
Serious concern, though, is a completely meaningless phrase in Washington, so I actually have a little bit of cynicism about this, but let's go forward on what the surface of this is anyways. because actual action was taken here, unlike when a congressman says the term serious concern. Sinclair Broadcast Group, which is the owner of a number of local TV stations around the country, like a lot of them, I think they are the single number one biggest, but they might be close to other ones, and this merger, which would have been with Tribune Media, would have put them over the top. Now, most people were surprised by this because, and do not ask me to explain the intricacies of this, but they made a rule change earlier in this year, or sometime last year, must have been last year, when this merger was first brought up. Oh yeah, May 2017. That kind of redefined UHF and VHF and how those signals define market size, and that's all how the FCC determines whether things are monopolies in certain media outlets. Anyway, so...
Oh, wow. Okay, so the way media companies... Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, because I've tried to do research on this, and it's like really is over my head.
Yeah, so media markets are just that. They're regulated, and certain companies are issued licenses to transmit at certain broadcast strength, UHF and VHF, so that they will affect a certain area, which is why Racine is somehow its own media market between Milwaukee and Chicago, even though it will very easily receive both signals and their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, this deal was going to add 42 stations to Sinclair's network of 170, which I was just doing math. It's 24% of their current footprint is what they're basically taking on.
Okay.
So it's opening up, like, as this article points out, like Chicago and other huge media markets. Like WGN is a multi-billion dollar enterprise, almost assuredly.
Yeah, WGN was part of that merger and is owned by Tribune, and that's a major Well, is it just a local station that...
Yeah, it's a local independent station. Like, some big cities can have those.
But they broadcast pretty... Chicago. Like, I remember... Like, I think when I was a kid, WGN would go far, though.
Yeah, it gets picked up by cable, and they don't... It was like, the problem is that they don't want competition, but it's like, for instance, Chicago and Rockford, it would be like Fox and ABC, NBC and CBS, all the major networks competing against each other if they were allowed to overlap, but WGN isn't necessarily affiliated with either of those, so we can broadcast to reach the Rockford market. But yeah, this is an interesting step for Ajit Pai.
Well, so let's get so they made a rule change that would have kind of redefined some of these market things, which would have allowed the common wisdom was, which that would turn this deal from a definitive no-go to at least a maybe-go.
Right, because they wouldn't be seen as taking up. They would, according to this, they'd just be going off of UHF, and so they'd count like half the geographical footprint that they actually reach, and that would not look like a huge part of huge thing exercise in gobbling up market share.
Yes, and I'm taking this from a Politico article by Margaret Harding McGill, and we'll put this on the Facebook page. But what's interesting to me is that Sinclair kept making concessions, like, we'll sell off a couple of these stations to make it work. We'll sell off a couple of these stations. Except they kept doing them in bad faith. So they were selling to companies that are tightly linked with theirs, either through, family members and shit like that, or, like, this one's, what was the one, like, this president used to be the president there, or something like that.
Yeah, weird personal relationships.
Yes, it's not, like, it was all very glaringly in bad faith. Because the thing about Sinclair is, and this is, like, a whole other topic, which, I mean, I think we kind of touched on in the past, but, like, they're not a purely profit-driven enterprise. They are also in it to be conservative propaganda.
Right, because they were the network that broadcasts that fucking, basically, news, or the propaganda piece about Trump and mandated that all their stations played it.
Yeah, and that would not, like, those types of moves you wouldn't do if you're trying to get the most viewers. Like, they are trying to be they're as politically motivated as they are financially motivated. If not more so. And so, like, all of these moves were made in bad faith to try and, like, get through, like, legal loopholes, but on the, like, if you just looked at it on the surface, they were clearly trying to maintain a sort of, like, a political hegemony over all of this broadcasting. And the guy who has been villainized because of net neutrality, but even beyond that, seems to be a corporate Republican media stooge, Ajit Pai. Even he couldn't go through with this. And so, like, I don't know what to think about it. Like, is he having a moment of honesty? Is it just so bad on its surface that, like, he couldn't do it? He couldn't get away with it? As hard as he tried, he couldn't get away with it?
No, there's no way, right? I mean, as I said, it's like 24%, and Sinclair already has, like, markets and stations in almost every market of the country. I would bet this might give them the rest, and there's no way that they would be okay with that.
But you mean the organization of the FCC?
I mean, otherwise, anti-competition and monopoly are just words, and apparently a policy of the government, because we allow it to happen even though we know it's about to happen.
Maybe I'm just too cynical, but that, like, that seems to be what I would expect them to do.
I mean, hey, even George Bush made one of the largest nature reserves in the history of the United States.
Yeah. There's just, sometimes things go too far. That's kind of what you're saying. And, like, even for someone who, in general, is in that direction of things, you know, I mean, Ajit Pai is for media consolidation. He just is.
Or taking the more cynical view, He's so corrupt that if this deal went through, the IG would have to investigate him and his ties to Sinclair and anybody else involved with this deal, and yeah. I bet they'd find some socks he's masturbated into in the back of his car.
I think that might be right. It's kind of like, I guess, like we're splitting hairs here that don't really matter. Something about it was too far for someone. That whether or not it was a moment of like moral, enlightenment, or if it was just like saving their ass.
I mean, we just have to be happy with the results if it does actually keep the deal from going through.
Well, okay, so then here's the last bit on it. So this goes to what? Some sort of court that looks at it. And this was done previously, the article points out, with a Comcast Time Warner Cable attempted merger in 2015. And there's some sort of hearing process. And this, so it wasn't completely squashed. It is going to that, which is widely viewed as a, like, you don't get your merger to go through if you go into this hearing process. But again, maybe I'm just being cynical, but man, there's just a part of me in the back of my head. It's like, I think we're just going to like find out in 2 years that this happened and we didn't notice.
Yeah, probably. Because there's just so much going on right now. It's difficult to ascertain what's going on and what's important.
But I mean, they wouldn't have this hearing process if it was impossible. Like, if it was for sure a death sentence on your merger, then they just wouldn't bother with this.
Yeah, they'll spend however much.
So there must be a chance.
Yeah, there's chance. Whole chance. Like, if the Circuit Court of Appeals was skeptical, just think, that included Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah. Well, doesn't mean the whole court. It doesn't say anything about unanimous, right?
Nope.
Okay. Anything else here then? I'm good on that. I mean, Sinclair, yeah. Something to keep an eye on. I think I put out a tweet that's like, because I think I expressed my skepticism, but it's like, if this doesn't go through, they're going to try another merger with like another company.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Right?
Maybe they'll just start getting more of the little ones or something. But
this will make them have access to 72% of TV households.
That's insane,
right? Maybe, well, that should be our census measurement.
72% of TV households. But like, okay, so like millennials, like us, don't watch.
It's a really disconcerting experience to watch cable television because I never see commercials typically.
Well, what I just mean is like we don't watch like local TV news as much. Although sometimes when like I happen to like it comes on after something else, like a sporting event or something, I actually usually watch it. I do kind of like to know about what's going on. It's just such a foreign concept for me to turn on the TV at 10 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock at night and watch the local news. Just don't do it. But what I was going to say is, so 72% of TV households they would be in, but like the percent of like old people households that would they would actually be watched in would be super high at that point.
Oh, yeah. Like, old people love news, right?
Oh, yeah. They love to watch the local news because that's what they've always done.
All right.
So, anyway, all right. Let's get into the juicy stuff after a short musical interlude.
Is it a commercial break? Not technically.
Nope, no commercials yet. I'm looking at you, I'm blanking on all the ones I ignore while I listen to other podcasts.
I mean, that's why I think I said earlier, like, this is my view of fun in the George Carlin, like, chaos is good sort of fun, or chaos is entertaining. I don't actually think the president...
Yeah, let's get into it. All right, so starting four or five days ago, like 3 or so months ago, when he went to England to meet with Theresa May.
Wait, 4 or 5 months ago?
I was kidding. I was being facetious.
Oh, because it was like it's been that long. Yeah. Yes. Well, I said in last week's episode something to England would be the news that happened. My timing was a little off. Because the NATO summit happened first, but yeah, so that
Wait,
was
just my prediction thing. Coming true because we're going to be at war with Russia soon.
You think we're going to be at war with Russia?
Anyways, later in the segment.
Okay. So where do you want
to start? He had this meeting with May, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And even before he goes to England, he has an interview with what, The Sun, I think it was, and Piers Morgan. Like, Piers Morgan tweeted something really obnoxious directed at his fictitious straw man of what liberals are, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. even before he got to Britain, he was already criticizing Theresa May and saying, hey, Boris Johnson would make a very good prime minister.
Ugh.
Okay. Yeah. And then he had the meeting with Theresa May. And, yeah, had a meeting with the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Which... I heard a lot of people lambaste his performance, but Snopes gave it a mixed review. It wasn't a lie that exactly that he was discourteous, but... And he didn't exactly walk in front of her, apparently. So, you know, he just embarrassed us on that interpersonal level that he seems apt to do. For a man of charisma and relationship-based deals and negotiations, he seems really... just kind of terrible at it.
Hmm.
Because, yeah, now that, well, poor England, as a result of, well, just before, what was it, last weekend, that Boris Johnson and Davis quit? The two secretary, the foreign secretary and the Brexit secretary?
Yep, that was just last week.
Yeah, so, yeah. As time flies, that seems like it should be bigger news. But yeah, so Theresa May is struggling to keep her Brexit plan from falling apart as it's trying... She's, like, you know, trying to put the wheels on and, like, put the transmission into place while four guys are trying to run it down the road behind.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the European Union is, shall we say, no longer optimistic about the possibility of a soft Brexit, and when they need America the most, we have a blundering clown who's going to destroy the special relationship the two countries have shared for at least 100 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was,
was one day of it.
Is she, is May, how is she doing domestically there? I mean, she's never been super popular, right?
No, she's always had, she had to really work together a coalition and ended up with some Irish radicals, well, not radicals, but some conservative Irish people in her cabinet who are kind of against her idea of a hard border in Ireland, which is kind of what they're going to because of their lack of competency and strategy at the whole Brexit negotiations.
All right, so then Trump goes on over to...
Brussels. Oh, God, this was just one day. Yeah.
So no, was... I thought Brussels was first.
Was it?
I don't know.
Oh, right, you're right. I have my timeline mixed up.
Yeah, NATO was first, and then he went... Okay, but anyways.
Then he destroyed our relationship with England,
so,
right?
So, go over the NATO thing, because I think that's...
kind of the meat and potatoes of this whole... So, apparently, at one point in the summit, they were going through their normal discussions, and then Trump starts pitching some kind of fit about them not spending enough, and insisting that people are going, that the various countries involved should spend 4% of their gross domestic product on their defense, which I'm just going to put this out there. We don't spend 4%. Even with our hugely inflated fucking conquer the world budget, we don't spend 4%. And even if we were, if Europe was also able and willing to do that, it would be incredibly dangerous. I mean, economically destructive, because 4% of their economy would be basically being wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And more so because, well, traditionally large-scale wars start with, you know, arms buildups.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which would just be terrible. Because if NATO started arming itself, they would have, you know, they've already got a couple hammers to swing, but if you hand them, like, a box of 50 hammers, they would definitely start finding nails in a lot of different places.
I don't want to jump
to conclusions, but, okay, so even just economically, that 4% would be, what, another $1 trillion of our budget, which would basically encompass everything we spend money on except for the interest on the debt that we're incurring because we're spending money, or for the money that we've already spent on defense.
Yeah.
Remember Clinton was going to destroy the deficit? It was going to be done by now. America was going to be
Well, I mean, then we elected a Republican.
He was like, budget. I've never met a budget surplus. I didn't enjoy spending into a deficit.
The budget is the most important thing unless a Republican is in power and we have all of these other things we want to do. Then it's not that important. When a Democrat is president, it is the most important thing. It is like the Bible.
Right? You must be a good steward of taxpayer dollars, which has really forced Democrats and people on the left to be really fiscally conservative and really responsible, which is, I guess, good. You rise to a challenge and you get better for it.
I mean, is that... I wonder if in a generation it's just that myth of the conservative being the kind of fiscal conservative, you know, is just not even going to exist anymore, and it's going to just be flipped.
Right, like so many other things.
Conservatives will be the warmongering spendocrat nationalists or something like that. I'm gonna patent that.
I mean,
that,
they already are.
That party name.
Hopefully they'll be labeled as such.
The WSN party, the warmongering centocrat nationalist party.
Fascists.
I was going to say, though, and I don't want to jump ahead too quick to Russia, because I'm sure you have more to say on NATO, but, I mean, I feel like you can't take this demand of 4% or even, because what was his first thing? It was like 2%? Because most of them don't spend 2, right?
Well, that's notionally what they've agreed to in the past, like under W or Obama, one of the two.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so, and even the 2% thing, I kind of don't really take on its surface that he actually wants them to increase spending that much.
No, he absolutely does. I mean, that was always been an aspiration, but Trump is going to try to hold the alliance to it, or else you wouldn't have, like... Because when he made this demand, it railroaded the entire summit like a needle scratch.
See, and
like they stopped all the other meetings and brought everybody into one room to discuss this stupid fucking idea.
But isn't, again, I'm just jumping ahead to the Russia thing. But isn't that the goal then? Isn't that the goal? Like,
encourage a war?
No, to destroy NATO. That's the narrative of everything. Is to destroy the Western alliances, which just like all the shit with like expecting, in the UN, expecting whatever, I don't know the organizations, but to like not call out Israeli human rights violations. And it's like, fuck it, we're leaving, and this whole thing, we'll stop giving money to this. You know, it's like, they don't actually care about, care about protecting Israel,
refugees.
But the goal is just to destroy the organization. That's the goal of it.
And, yeah, because it's like one of the few things that are buttressing, you know, Palestinian society.
So anyway, anything more? I mean, we'll get to Russia in a second here, but
well, I mean, it can't be a happy summit. I mean, they've got to be thinking like, so are we good? Can we kick out the Americans? I mean, together amid with the European Union and I guess maybe Britain, they could probably at least ensure their own continental defense. I mean, the Italian Coast Guard is basically, well, not exactly stopped, but put a tamp down on the Libyan human trafficking traffic. So,
but I mean, this is kind of like what if stuff. But would they stay together? If
well, without the United States, that would give more, I guess, more reason to stay together.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of these governments are. I don't want to overblow Russia being like what it was in, I don't know, like 1944 or 1744 for that matter. But
even 1917.
But I mean, they are still not, you know, they're not part of NATO, and they are one of the biggest militaries in the world, and they are on the border of NATO, or close to it. So I mean, they are something NATO is still in existence to defend against, even as unlikely as that may be in the modern age. But a lot of these governments are like cozying up to Putin and to Russia. They are Trump-like in their disdain for Western alliances. So,
like Italy and Hungary.
Yeah, and so, like, if they did kick the U.S. out because they're like, hey, they are crazy, they are not helpful, they are making these demands, blah, blah, blah. Okay, they're out. I'm sure, yeah, those countries could all put together a military that could probably crush Russia, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, even
not counting technology. Nukes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, nukes are...
Well, I mean, nukes
they
just...
have them, but I'm...
Yeah. Well... nukes don't really come into it unless you're willing. It's like, you know, unless you're willing to destroy the world.
Yeah, it's like you lose and you're just trying to take the board with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you have these types of conversations, I just don't think the nukes help all that much. Although Trump likes talking about nukes, so maybe it's presidential.
It just basically ends the conversation. Sorry for that.
I don't know. I don't know where this... I just don't know that it's that strong, even without Trump in it. Like, it has its other problems, is all. I mean, or its other members that are. I don't know. Is Italy making waves in NATO? I mean, I know they are in the EU, but maybe NATO is different.
Yeah, NATO is. Well, I mean, it kind of is different because it's that defense which. You know, it stood this long. That's got to count for something. And they kind of use that to, you know, buttress their own military spending. Like, NATO together can field way more tech and personnel and cover way more area than any of these individual countries could on their own. Like, even the United States. Like, without our European footprint, we would basically have very limited access to Central Asia.
Would you say you would expect a country like, say, the current government of Italy or, I guess, Hungary to, it's more likely they would attempt to leave the EU and stay in NATO than exit both of them?
Yeah, like Britain. Like, let's get rid of the EU, but this NATO thing is fine.
Yeah, no one in Britain is pushing for them to leave NATO right now. No one prominent. I'm sure there's someone, of course.
What, the fringiest of fringe of the UKIP people?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, yeah, I don't know.
Then the meeting in Helsinki? Should we go to that?
Yeah, okay, so yeah. He had some NATO things. He caused some trouble with the alliances. Goes to England. He causes some trouble with what was the sorry. There was a quote. Hold on about England. I'm not going to be able to find it because it's too like Trumpian and chaotic for me to even look up, but where he's like talking about trade or something with England, and he's like, Britain has a lot of great products, you know, they have a lot of great products, you know, and like they have so many different names, like England and Great Britain and United Kingdom, and I always ask them like what they want to be called, and you know, so like they have all these great names and a lot of great products. like their different names were their product.
Did you forget where the sentence started, bro? Yeah.
And he called Ireland part of Great Britain or the United Kingdom.
Yeah, go to Dublin and say that. I dare you.
Yeah, no, the Irish were like pissed off. I mean, I he might have just forgot to say Northern, I guess. But I, you know, the way he worded it, I think he thinks Ireland is part of it. Oh man, that guy
didn't surprise me.
Okay, so then flash forward Helsinki. It was a big topic on the news shows all weekend. I know they were talking about it on Sunday news shows.
All of our favorite war criminals like John Brennan and David Frum and other administration officials were quick and vocal to condemn him and his treasonous acts.
I don't know many people, though, who... There weren't many who were defending him. Except Rand
Paul. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily defend him. Like, calling... I mean, treason? Yeah.
So tell me what he what did he do first before we nitpick treason?
Well, he sat down with Putin. It was such a nothing burger meeting. I mean, they could talk about Syria and Ukraine, which I mean, neither of those situations are going to involve our input, so to speak. I mean, I suppose the Russians could be like, hey, could you stop selling them tow-guided missiles to Ukraine specifically? And then I guess Trump would be like, but I love selling guns. It's like the one bipartisan American tradition that we've had going for, like, literally centuries.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it was anything that was like any sort of agreement or... topic that was discussed in the meetings. It was one, the lack of certain things being discussed, right. and it was two, it was the press conference.
The press conference after was the real mess.
Wasn't the press conference? Press conference was before, I thought.
No, they had like a photographic meet and greet, and then they had the press conference after. Okay. But the one thing I'll say, like, the thing that Trump seems to have said that they did talk about was, like, some kind of weird future relationship. Like, if we improve our relationship with Russia, then things will get better in, like, the most vacuous sense that, of course, he could elaborate upon.
Yeah, it's so lacking in detail and vision that it's meaningless. And to me, that's all just an excuse for whatever else we want to call everything else, which we'll get to in a second, but...
Like, if we move this needle at all, we can point to it as progress and overseas. I guess.
It's almost... I don't know how to put this. Could you even, if I gave you time and sat down with a piece of paper, could you write out to me some sort of, like, what you think our president's vision of our relationship with the Russian nation will be going forward? Or even should be. No. Like, does he just mean everything? Like, we should be equal allies with everything? Is he kind of like a foreign libertarian that way? Like, I don't even know. But then he talks shit about all these other countries.
Yeah, he's like a forward-thinking internationalist in that respect, but... And then he's like a complete and total xenophobe in so many other respects.
It's incoherent.
Yeah. It's entirely incoherent. Like, does anybody have an idea of what our relationship with Russia should be right now? I mean, there are some pretty terrible things which they should rightly, you know, be penalized for. I mean, like, they violated the Westphalian, like, consensus that has kind of governed international security since, like, the 17th century. by invading another country and taking a piece of it and being like, well, this is ours now, and it's a province. And we built a road to it from our territory, so...
They just did that. You know, they just... Yeah.
They just did that.
They just did it. I mean, and I really don't want it, like...
And this is... I'm not even mentioning the... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, I'm sure we can, you know... We could have, like, a modern history segment about, like, these things happening and American response, the West response to it before. But, you know, we are living in the here and now with this president here and now.
Well, remember when Iraq invaded Kuwait and tried to claim it as its own?
Yeah, that's... okay, so... So,
I guess... press conference afterwards where he was like, I don't think our intelligence agents... Like, he's been kind of walking the statement back, but he basically expressed doubt as to the ability and veracity of the reports that he was getting from the intelligence agencies, because later he was like, I trust my cap or entirely capitalized intelligence agencies. And it's like, what the fuck do you mean? They, for one, they don't belong to you. And it's like, you didn't appoint the people that are there. It's like, because the people who actually do the work that you're reading are people who took a very complicated civil service exam and a lengthy entry process to get to where they are. Not the people who you tell them, you appoint to yell at those people.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. No, I mean, the press conference, oh, it was... And I think what really got people... Because when I first like got on probably Twitter, so whatever, social media yesterday, I saw all this outrage, but I was like, wait, what happened? Like, I couldn't figure out what happened. Like, I couldn't even figure out vaguely what happened. Everyone's just...
It's like walking into a disaster area, and everybody's, like, still panicking, so you can't even, like, was it an earthquake? Tornado? Are we still in danger?
Yeah, it's just, they were just, like, so upset about Russia. And I think it was more like his just complete unwillingness to say... It's kind of been the same complaint over and over, but it had this visceral kind of visual image of him standing next to him at an extended press conference where tough questions were being asked and to both presidents. And he just refused... You know, he's sitting, okay, so like he's walking back these statements about the intelligence agency's 2016 election assessments today, right? And he's done this before. He's kind of said one thing, he says the other, you know, because like he's a liar, right? So he does that a lot.
Because that's what liars do.
Yeah. But, well, and he's like a, trying to please whoever's in front of him type liar. If it's the American press, fine. If it's the president of Russia, then, say one thing.
It better not be CNN, though. yeah. I guess we should, we'll save that for the last part of the segment.
So, he cannot say on camera, regardless of being in front of Putin, he cannot say on camera, I think Russia did this, I think Putin gave the order, and I think they attempted to blah, blah, blah for the election, whatever you want to put it. Mm-hmm. No, there's the personal reason for it. There's the clear personal reason, which is he can't admit that he may not have won, right? You know, the crowd size, all of that ego stroking of his that he has to always have. But I hate to say this, but he's intelligent enough, I think, to...
You came out with a stable genius line recently, right?
To walk the line between... making himself seem great for winning the election and condemning Russia for effing with America. Like, I think he would have the rhetorical skill to find that messaging and do that, but he doesn't, and he hasn't, and he refuses to say anything bad about... He will, like, at the drop of a hat over 2% military spending, call all these Europeans a bunch of jackasses. But he won't say a thing over Russia. And you know, and he acts like things that happened before him, he doesn't have to condemn. So it's like, Russia could have, like, committed a Holocaust under the Obama administration, and Trump would just,
it's Obama's
like,
fault, yeah.
Just, yeah, Washington, it's, that's Obama's fault, not Russia's fault. What? And yeah. And then just try and move on for... What I was going to get back to is... I also am skeptical using the word treason. But there has been such a mountain of evidence pushing a narrative that we don't know the exact quid pro quo and where it happened and over what thing. But there is such a narrative.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if it's not treason, it's at least conspiracy to defraud the United States by literally stealing an election or doing things to keep the influence from happening in a normal process.
Well, and yeah, I mean, and so, and that's like, it's not, and nor do I think the case could ever be, it's just like, it just can't be treason by legal definition, right? Because that involves, I believe, like a wartime adversary or something.
Yeah, like selling secrets or classified information to a hostile power during a time of war. Like, if we do get into a shooting war with the Russians and someone sold them some actionable or valuable or otherwise useful intelligence, that would be treason.
But there is a colloquial use of the word treason, which is being... Or traitor. Maybe traitor is a better word, because traitor isn't illegal.
Yeah, and it's... Right. This is the linguistic difference between, like, everyday common person, or the language of that we use commonly, and the language that lawyers use, because when they use words, they're always very specific in what they mean.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. Maybe traitorous is a better word. I don't know. But there definitely seems to be,
there's a lot of there's like some flames poking out around this smoke now. It's not just
because the thing is, it's like if you came up with a hypothesis in science based on observation that you've done, right? Your next step is to then replicate and prove the hypothesis by setting up a bunch of variables and see if it replicates what your theory is, because then that proves, shows a pattern between your original observations and then your set experiment. And with Trump is, so we noticed a bunch of shit weird with him involving Russia, you know, over the course of like early 2017.
Right, that emails line in June has always stuck out as weird. Hey, Russia, I don't know if you're listening, but if you have those 30,000 missing emails, which actually was a signal to the Russians through as a part of an intelligence.
Well, I mean, we haven't even mentioned that the context in this Helsinki meeting is that on Friday, as he's heading to Europe and starting meetings there, there are indictments of a bunch of GRU agents.
I bet that was Rod Rosenstein's her favorite fucking media appearance, right? He got to go on TV. That's the one thing that everybody talked about all weekend. Ruin fucking Trump's.
It is, although I don't know if he's.
I don't think he's that partisan or vindictive. This is just.
I don't even think he's that like attention seeking, because like I saw something in his face that day that was like, I don't want to be here doing this, like. And that's just like a hunch in my gut that he took that job not expecting this. He probably knew some shit about Trump. He probably didn't think much of Trump, but whatever. He's like, I'm a lawyery guy. I'm a prosecutor. This is just the thing I do, and I'm honored to have this job. And then he gets bombarded with the tidal wave of Trump Russia. And I don't want to blow up the guy too much and be like, he's acting out of honor and love of country. But I don't think he's doing it because of, like, like
I mean, what would you? What would happen? He had to do that, or because if Mueller handed him that indictment and he just sat on it, then that would be like he had to announce it as publicly and as loudly as he could to make sure that it was like this is investigation is in no way compromised. It's practically straight from the mm-hmm. horse's mouth, as it were.
Yeah.
I mean, wow, I never realized how much of a horse Robert Mueller looks like. Yeah, I can unsee that.
But you know, kind of like a noble, yeah, he's like
a noble steed.
Although Sam the Eagle is still the best comparison for him.
Yeah, it is
the Muppet. Anyway, and then so that happens Friday, a couple days before he meets with Putin, and that's what kind of threw gasoline on all the flames of you know, like some people think he should have canceled the meeting with Putin. He should have at least brought it up. I recall seeing past presidents, and I seem to have some memories of, say, Obama, like, being at, like, you saw Trump at the pedestal, you know, next to the other president, there's a big press conference, where, like, they say something that the other guy doesn't like, but, you know, you just, like, kind of do your job and say it. Like, even if you realize that that may be a little bit of a roadblock with the meeting you're about to have, it's like your duty, and both parties do that all the time. Like, didn't Trump say something about Theresa May in front of her at a press conference?
Yeah. It was terrible. He just kept embarrassing the people he was talking to.
Yeah, but, I mean, so like he has it in him to be blunt about what he thinks with Putin standing right there. Like, he is capable of doing that for any other person in the world.
I'm going to play a little bit of not necessarily devil's advocate, but even if... So, another reason Donald Trump is absolutely terrible is that even if this were in furtherance of some wider criminal act or potentially treasonous action, the best thing that Donald Trump could have said to Putin would be to, well, and I guess in some levels the best moral thing and diplomatic thing would be for him to actually tell him to bring those people or deport those people to the United States to stand trial.
Wait, what?
Because in some ways, like the people who have been indicted who are, you know, yeah, sitting in Russia, like, extradite them to the United States to stand trial for these crimes. Wait, it would be the best and worst thing to happen to this investigation.
Oh. Wait, why is the worst part?
Because our dysfunctional judicial system would cough and stutter at the various legal and foreign policy implications of that prosecution.
Yeah, our legal system, as far as I understand, judicial system does not like things involving high-level foreign policy or things involving classified information, even.
Or technology, Jesus Christ. Try to fucking discriminate between a DDoS attack and a phishing attack to a jury of your peers. It's like, all right, bear with me, people.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. But how would that... But...
Because if, you know, even if this were in further events of a conspiracy to do this, like, all those people would maybe get off even innocent, or at best with a deadlocked jury.
No, I get that. And that makes sense. That's a good point. Which is probably why, and I haven't read that many indictments in my life, but I understand that this is a fairly detailed indictment, and maybe that's kind of why, because like, they know that they're not really going to be bringing this to trial, so there really won't be more shedding of light on these issues. At least when it comes mm-hmm. to those individuals specifically. But why, when you say, he should have asked that. Is there a reason he shouldn't have asked it? Beyond kind of like what you're saying, but that's more of like a Mueller, the prosecutor's concern, not the president's.
I guess because he's stupid? I don't know. Okay. I can't think of a reason why somebody shouldn't do that.
Well, like, I mean, to me, there's like a very personal. Like, he thinks, oh, it's like you know, have you ever been around someone that it's like you're trying to be in the good graces of, like, you know, like maybe like a mother-in-law, or, you know, like hypothetically, something like that, like an in-law type person. You don't maybe like, but you're trying to get in the good graces of, or maybe you do like, and you're trying to get in the good graces of. You're careful with your language, and you don't want to say anything that might set them off. And but that's like the snowflake thing or whatever with Trump, is that, like, he's not the strongman tough guy that people thought when they elected him, because he doesn't do that sort of thing to other strongman tough guy, which, I mean, I think they're all a bunch of frauds, but...
And, you know, I guess we touched on this earlier, but this kind of goes to the point that this summit wasn't actually aimed at improving Russian-U.S. relations, because they didn't talk about the things that, if resolved, could actually serve to improve our diplomatic, economic, fucking education, whatever level you want to call it, our, you know, the various contacts two countries the size of the United States and Russia could have.
Yeah. Why, or like the Arctic... Do they ever talk about the Arctic?
Oh my God, are we still losing that land race?
I think that's more of a thing that the Canadians are pissed off about, though.
Yeah.
As far as I understand, probably the Norwegians as well.
That's another huge NATO thing, right?
Actually, yeah. Yeah. Canada's part of it. Norway is part of a NATO, though, right?
Aren't they? They're not part of the EU.
Oh. But they are part of NATO. Interesting. What's the significance of this meeting even having been placed after the NATO meeting?
Well, typically, in normal diplomatic order, it would have turned into 2 days of, like, the member states of NATO putting their heads together and talking and arguing through what the bloc and the United States should bring to the attention and attempt to address with, you know, start a dialogue with President Putin about, and Russia in general. But that is obviously not what actually happened. He just took turns pissing in various people's soup bowls and salad bars. But anyways, we should go back to finish off the segment. We should talk about that terrible segment, or the terrible instance in, what was that? Is that Brussels at the beginning of the week, the first press conference overseas that he had?
Go on.
He was like, I'm not taking a question from, like, Jim Acosta, I think, tried to ask him a question at a press conference. He's like, I'm not talking to CNN. It's fake news. Where's the reporter from Fox News? Let me get a question from him. And, I don't think he called on CNN for any questions for any press conferences for the rest of the time that he was on his European vacation. Oh, unless Andy spent last weekend golfing in Scotland, too, in the middle of this trip. Lest we forget that.
I don't know. How noble are these journalists?
I mean, apparently not, because they should have been like, well, the Fox News guy should have just kept handing, and whoever after him, should have kept handing the microphone to the CNN guy.
Yeah.
He's not going to answer one question, then he shouldn't be answering any questions.
And here's the thing that I don't think they realize. I don't think they realize their power. It's like, you know, the whole concept of, like, unionizing. Not that they would actually have to formally be a union. Well, they are, kind of. I mean, they're
already journalist unions, right?
Yeah, they actually are. Workers. Well, but they have the White House Correspondents Association. They're like a...
Oh, right, yeah.
But
like those assholes.
Still, they get the idea of getting together. And it seems like power in number and labor is, like, so foreign to people nowadays, because if they just did that...
Can you imagine if all they sent was a pool reporter and a pool photographer to any press thing with Trump? It would infuriate him, right?
Yeah, if the Americans... Nuts. So let's say that happened, and the next press conference, the American delegation, you know, journalists, just didn't show up. Or they did that, where they all were like, okay, you don't call on Mr. Acosta, and they all keep trying to give the mic to him, they all defer to him, and that would humiliate the President of the United States in front of cameras and media. He would never pull that shit again.
Or he would never give press conferences again.
He barely does them anyways. He only does them when he's with a foreign leader, because they probably insist on it.
Right? Most foreign leaders are used to it. They have to love tangling with the press and representing the parliamentary democracy.
Yeah, especially, like, yeah, parliamentary ones. They have to do that. I mean, yeah. But... if he got embarrassed that way, because that would be embarrassing, mind you. Like, even if the Fox News guy, you know, all of them are like, no, you have to answer questions. And that's how you know that... I'm not saying they're as divided as, like, particularly people on the right think journalists are biased and divided and partisan, but that's how you know that they kind of are, right? Or at least they're... No, they just
willing
kind of
to be complicit.
Yeah. Like, yeah, or they're just willing to, like, yeah, suck up to the people in power. Because if they had integrity about their craft and their profession and their
and the truth.
And the insistence that it's in the public interest. I mean, unless he was asking, like, a completely moronic question, I guess that's possible that, you know, like, what color underwear are you wearing today, Mr. President? You know, something like that. So...
I'd even be...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, for a stupid question, I would have been like, so, how much is a gallon of milk here in England, sir?
He wouldn't...
He wouldn't even begin to know how to answer that question.
Ask him to explain the differences between American and English as languages. See how far he gets.
But again, he forgets where the start question, sir. The sentence he's started, so...
Yeah. All right, I think we actually have a little more Russia to talk about, but let's fold that into closing thoughts, because it's kind of a hashtag embarrassing Wisconsin issue.
Oh my god, right?
All right, we'll be back in a second. Different two in 2016, and that's probably because there was a bunch of Russian money coming in.
Right, easier to launder it through, like, troll accounts. You can kite money, yeah.
So, we have some closing thoughts. And let's start out with, we brought up in the previous segment how there were a bunch of indictments of Russian spies on Friday of last week by the special counsel's office. And Monday, unrelated to that, though we don't know if maybe there was something handed off, but none of the reporting I saw said that. So supposedly just the D.C. field office doing D.C. field office type work. Arrested and charged Maria Butina as being a foreign agent. An unregistered foreign agent, right? Isn't that it?
Right. That's real. That's a crime.
Yeah. You're allowed to be.
It's to represent the interests of a foreign nation or corporation in business before the United States government. It's kind of innocuous, kind of. Emotionally.
And she is closely tied with Alexander Torshin. Mother Jones, in their May-June issue called, before this happened, by the way, this arrest, called her his protege.
That's what Rolling Stone said in April. Here I'm looking at by Tom Dickinson.
Alexander Torshin has been, as far as I understand, involved in American conservative politics for decades, and is... I'm trying to find it now. Is currently in the Russian Central Bank. Works for the Russian Central Bank. In her indictment, I was reading some about it. You know, it doesn't use a lot of other names. But it does reference her having, like, I don't know if they use the word handler, but a Russian handler, something along those lines. kind of assumed to be torsion, which I find a little interesting then, because, I mean, torsion guy, by the way, was, like, under investigation in Spain for being a godfather-like criminal.
I mean, Putin kind of surrounds himself with these kind of criminal oligarchs.
No, yeah, oh, yeah, for sure. And he's apparently a long time ally of Putin, ties to the Russian mob. And anyway, so she was arrested. And what is particularly interesting to us is that she gained access to a lot of American politicians because she...
Prominent Republican politicians.
Republican politicians. Because she, her kind of way in the door here in America was through gun rights activism. And, she...
Yeah, right.
And what?
In the NRA specifically.
In the NRA specifically, and she apparently was meeting with a few people, but there are a number of pictures that are now online and being reported in actually local Wisconsin news that she had some run-ins with Governor Scott Walker.
And Sheriff David Clark.
Yes. I mean, Clark went to Russia, like, with her, or at least kind of on her dime or something.
NRA event.
Like, he had to come back and, like, file that because of, like, ethics rules for taking money for the trip. Or not, you know, they paid for
getting
the trip.
Paid, yeah, for paying for the trip. Yeah. That's income for him, basically.
Yeah. So there's the one picture of Walker, which is, like, him getting a jewelry box from the lady with that Alexander Torshin right there. Like, Torshin is right there.
It looks like he, like, Scott Walker is not happy at whatever he's being handed in that box. Yeah. I've been looking at it since that lady posted it on your Facebook, or your Twitter.
Yeah.
Or tweet the other day, and especially in the last hour or so, he is not happy. It's like a jewelry box of, is it like a necklace? What? It's got to be a signal, right? Her handler is, okay, so let's go down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole. So the spy... that is now revealed to be a spy, visited our state governor when he was announcing his presidential run and brought him a memento from Russia. And her handler was right there, so it was from above him because he's only there to make sure that Scott Walker gets this memento and gets the point of what the memento was supposed to signify.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would bet it was something along the lines of, hey, Scott, remember your friends. Because according to multiple press accounts now, he greeted her in Russian at that party. So he knew who she was. He apparently has enough dealings with Russia to open a book for the first time in his entire life and learn a word, at least, in a different language.
That was the NRA... The other guy in that picture, by the way, is the NRA president.
Holy cow.
That was Keen. That guy behind
him. Oh, okay, that's Keen. Wow, that's a huge picture. So much corrupt money in that picture.
One thing I want to get a little clear is that this timeline, this is why I like this Mother Jones article, it had a timeline of some of these things. I want to be a little clear, and I don't know that we know the answer, but she met with Walker twice in short order. And I just want to... So in April of 2015, she posted about 200 pictures from Nashville, including one with Governor Walker, which is... Let me see the picture.
Oh, so they went to the NRA convention together.
Yeah. No, so this is... So the pictures that we were looking at are from this. Not from announcement. This is a couple months before he announces he's running for president. And by the way, in this picture, which I'm going to send you, welcome internet to production on the fly. Okay. There it was. It's from her, like, Facebook page or something. He's smiling and he's posing for a picture. Presumably this is right after that other picture. So as upset as he may look, he's like, let's take a picture.
I mean, he is a politician.
Yeah. But anyways, here. And this is where he greeted her. he greeted her in Russian. She notes at the time he's one of the possible future nominees for the post of U.S. president. And
ponders what? Even then, this is before he announced, right?
Yeah, although
I guess it was.
There's a lot of loose lips. I mean, I don't know if that is. I'm sure there were journalists and shit that knew that he had formed exploratory committees and stuff.
Yeah, I suppose. Any good spy would have known.
Donald Trump was also at this event. And Torshin talked with the president at that, the future president at that meeting. And then a couple months later, she goes to an event
where he announces his run for presidency,
which is in July 13th, almost exactly 2 years ago, for some reason. And it looks like within a few months, December 2015 is when Sheriff David Clark goes there. I don't know. Like, I saw it brought up that the David Clark thing struck some people as interesting because it's, like, courting this sort of controversial swing state politician.
And he's, like, the one guy who could, in a very real way, determine the outcome in, like, Wisconsin by making sure there's Milwaukee County Sheriff deputies posted up outside, prominently outside all of the voting places in metropolitan Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just if it really was an expansive active measures campaign, you know, you
cover all your bases.
Yeah, on every level that you can. I don't know. I'm not saying that necessarily. I'm not accusing David Clark of anything in and of itself. I mean, there's plenty to accuse David Clark of. Don't get me wrong.
I'm not actually accusing him outright of being a conspirator in this effort to defraud the United States.
But possibly. Anyway, Walker's tied in with that. He says, I believe I read earlier today, he has not been contacted by the FBI. There was a politician mentioned in her charges or in her indictment or whatever. This is the article I read about it, but it didn't name a name, and so I don't.
Is that Walker? Oh God, Walker is the first politician to get hit by Mueller directly. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. What a great.
That would be great. Wouldn't that be great? We'd be like, whoa! That would shock me. That would be genuinely shocking. Whereas, it's hard to be that shocked. No, as we just talked about Putin and Trump, none of that shocked me, by the way, just to go back to the last segment. none of that was surprising to me. Might have been face.
Trump being Trump for Putin's sake.
Might have slapped my face a few times, like, oh, God. But didn't shock
this.
Me. Anyway. I don't know. I'm going to be kind of interested in what happens with that lady because of ties to Wisconsin.
You want to talk about your controversial Foxconn opinion?
Yeah, apparently. Rick
bring up more of why Scott Walker's terrible.
Yes. Scott Walker, by the way, Charles just referenced the tweet I made where I tweeted out this article by Rick Rommel. Foxconn Walker will unveil, quote, major economic development, quote, end quote, in Eau Claire. I guess Foxconn bought a couple buildings there and is going to have some sort of business-y office. They're not producing anything there, right? They're just...
No, it's like a research facility, I would bet, or maybe a public relations maneuver,
Or just...
It's like, we need to get, prominent in a different part of the state. Like, the part of the state least likely to benefit
from
Foxconn. Eau Claire.
Oh,
yes.
Fuck, dude. You're just... Oh, man. I didn't even totally put all those pieces together when I... Okay. Step back. So I tweeted this out, and I said, it's looking more and more like... Oh, man. It's getting me that you just explained more of what I was saying. It's looking more and more like Walker is using the Foxconn development as a campaign tool. And, maybe sort of precisely placed... are conveniently placed in 2018, which is a re-election year for him. He, you know, was not a popular governor. I don't know what the exact numbers are right now. I haven't seen recent approval numbers for him, but he wasn't particularly popular in terms of approval and likely success to be re-elected as of a year and a half ago. I mean, you saying that because that's...
He's at 38%, by the way, according to the most recent number I could find.
So he's not that popular still. No, and so the thing I'd been hearing about Fox on, which maybe we've touched on in the show before, is how it doesn't really touch the whole state. And, yeah, you're kind of blowing my mind with that comment, because that is something I've heard from even, I've seen reports, from around the state where they've talked to even, conservatives in other parts of the state, and they're like, I don't know, they're anywhere between ambivalent to against it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some will just follow Walker anywhere, of course, but because it doesn't really help them. I mean, yeah,
there
might...
It doesn't even help Deloitte, and we're only, less than 100 miles away.
Yeah, but, oh, man. So they started... So first it was happening in Racine, which is in the very corner of Wisconsin near Chicago, for those who don't know. Then it branched into the city of Milwaukee. Well, they bought a building. They bought a big building there, actually.
They bought one of the biggest buildings that's most prominent in the Milwaukee skyline.
And they said they're going to...
They bought the Northwestern Mutual building, right?
And I don't know if the whole building is going to be their offices, but they bought the building. They're going to have some offices there. So, you know, not that I think that's going to swing many, in-city of Milwaukee voters like Scott Walker. But at least it's kind of, it's prominent. It's... showy. Then they announced, I think a few weeks ago, something in Green Bay. And now Eau Claire. And that's almost covering every corner of the state except for kind of Madison, the south, central, southeastern, or western.
The parts that either Scott Walker has or he really doesn't have, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly, yeah. Madison is not really something that...
Scott Walker is not going to have a campaign event somewhere in a Madison park.
Well, that's the thing with
that's
kind of the thing with the Milwaukee thing is that, okay, yeah, the city of Milwaukee is unlikely to vote very much for Scott Walker, but the city of Milwaukee is tightly connected with its conservative suburbs. A lot of those people work in Milwaukee. Exactly.
And all those people commute and work downtown.
I have an aunt who
lives in the Wow counties.
I have an aunt who works in one of the big buildings downtown in Milwaukee, and it's kind of a drive because she lives near the lake in Racine. It's a shitty to downtown Milwaukee. Yeah, and she's worked there for decades, and she's not frothing at the mouth conservative, unlike most conservatives I know. Wow. Yeah, how does that work? Do they urge them to do that? Do they, early on in the process, kind of be like... Because you could kind of do it from a non-shady, non-political perspective. You could push the idea of, well, it would really benefit Wisconsin if you had offices around the state. Even though, having this one office in Eau Claire isn't really, that beneficial.
Impactful? Is that the word?
Yeah, it's not that much, but you can. But if you have a big, announcement with the governor, if you turn it into a campaign thing, then it starts seeming impactful.
Yeah. So Foxconn just basically put on a campaign event for Walker in another part of Wisconsin. And Eau Claire, I'm pretty sure, is relatively liberal.
Yeah, but there's area around there that.
Yeah.
In general, most Democrats in Wisconsin live in the city of Milwaukee and the city of Madison.
We're not getting into the Tammy Duckworth argument again, I'm pretty sure that...
but there, of course, are many, many that are in the smaller cities and in the rural parts.
There are some parts, especially in the northern part of Wisconsin, that are violently leftist. Well, maybe not violently, but radically left, even more than Madison.
Yeah,
but they're actually eco anarchists, basically.
I mean,
yeah, but they're isolated.
Well, and thinking of it the flip way, I mean, apparently 5% of Madison is conservative.
At least.
It's like 5 to 10. I don't think it's more than 10.
Like, I bet it's more than it used to be.
Dude, Madison votes like... I mean, depending on how you define... If we're being, like, really loose with our definition of conservative, maybe, but, I mean, they vote, like, 89-90% for, or higher, for, every Democratic politician. And that's assuming, like, and I would bet any money that for the conservatives in the city of Madison, they vote at a higher percentage than liberals do. Because there's probably a shit ton of non-voting liberals in Madison. Like, students, namely. But, anyway.
Yeah.
So, fun times in Wisconsin. Use hashtag embarrassing Wisconsin for anything, for any more dirt dug up on our governor. So that's Foxconn, that's the president. Although,
most of them are little groundbreakings.
Yeah.
Them digging dirt on themselves.
The California Democratic Party, speaking of state politics, which would be the largest state party in the country, announced last week sometime that they will no longer be accepting contributions from companies or trade associations that operate private prisons, private detention centers, or other incarceration services that should be provided by publicly accountable government entities. I like that.
That seems pretty common sense, right? We should totally do that. Are there private prisons in Wisconsin? I'm not sure. Not that I can think of.
I don't know a lot about how that operates. Like, why some places have more and some places have less. And I assume just different states have different laws about...
Incarcerating people seems like a messy, spendy business. And it's you get immediately into very deep state law in doing it. So
it's still shocking to me that there are private prisons. Still is a surprise.
Yeah, right. There's almost no reason that should be allowed, right?
It seems to be one of the most basic state functions to me. When I think about I mean, when I think about what the state, because it's like let's privatize judges too while we're at it.
No, those are the mandatory arbitration clauses.
Yeah, I know it does happen. You're right. of course. It's hard to think of bad things nowadays that aren't happening. but California, this was, I saw it in a tweet by David Dayan.
A reporter from The Intercept.
Yeah, contributor to The Intercept and New Republic.
Really a fellowship, though.
They're... The chairman of the party, Eric C. Bauman, even announced that the contributions the party has already received since his election as chair on May 21st, 2017, will be donated to organizations fighting to assist and protect immigrants whose lives are being endangered by the policies of the Trump administration.
Awesome.
Yeah. No, hey, that's actually probably a sizable... Because if he was... I would assume most of that would go to legal assistance, I would think, just because that is something that is in short supply.
Well, there's got to be shelters, because like, a lot of these people like come here from... have to leave behind everything but their child and here with nothing. Hopefully there are a lot of organizations out there to protect and support them.
But nonetheless, that's... I mean, this has to be in the millions, right?
Yeah.
For a party that big?
Hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, it's still more than a drop of a bucket.
Yeah.
And it's more fucked up that those people have so much money that they can just spend on campaign donations.
Oh, yeah. Well...
this is one of those reasons I'm against private companies having, like, any political contributions, because, you know, they... Okay, so because they're private companies, they have to spend money to put an effort to make money. So they saw that as a form of investment, and that seems really sick to me on very, very many levels. Like, it just compromises so many parts of democracy and fairness and everything we think of as, you know, noble justice and American.
I think it's, you know, the idea of money in politics is, at its most innocent, is, it makes sense, right? Like, let's say, it's hard to think of, like, I'm terrible at thinking of hypotheticals, but let's say there's, like, some weird law about, like, you can't be, like, you can't do this thing, and it, like, no one even remembers why the law exists. Like, this is not, you can't even find one scientist to be like, well, it's for this environmental reason. And something, you can't build this thing this close to blah, blah, blah. So someone wants to get the law. Actually, I have a good real-world example. There was something to do with making cookies, like baked items, in your home and selling them. And there was a recent law changed. And, like, I know one of the ladies. She used to come into the store I used to work at. And she's, like, the super sweet lady. And she, I saw her in the paper one day. She was one of three people who, like, initiated all of this, right? And this was a very kind of innocent thing that they, I mean, granted, they didn't spend millions lobbying the government, but they did lobby people. I mean, they did actually try and communicate with politicians and to do this.
Apparently, effectively.
Yeah, and so, like, the idea of, you know, maybe spending some money to help your industry, to help the lives of workers, and, you know, like, there's an innocent spin you could put on these things, but there is, like, tons of real-world data about it being terrible. And that kind of, this is where I have, like, some trouble with understanding, like, court cases. Particularly, like, constitutional, like Supreme Court, federal court cases, where it's like, it seems sometimes that they rule on, and the cases that gain the prominence, of course, would be, like, the ones that are most to the side of one issue. Like take, like, unions being political type cases, like Janus or whatever, but they're not going to take, like, ones that are, like, right in the middle and really tough and divisive. They're going to take the ones that they can most get the result they want from.
Yeah, and that's, like, one of Roberts' things. Like, he picks cases that he knows can move.
Yeah. I mean, granted, Roberts also does the kind of, tries to be often narrow in the rulings. I mean, I don't think he always has been, you know, often does that. So, like, that's the kind of flip to that coin. But it's just, like, you have all this, like, real-world data and facts and stories and
anecdotes, lots of qualitative and quantitative information.
And results about money and politics being shitty. And of course there's an idea, you know, like, we need the politicians to change the law, and they're the ones being paid, and obviously that's a problem. But it's like, you can easily look at it innocently, and, like, you should have the constitutional right to do this innocent thing. And I don't know what, I don't know what to do with that, 'cause I do think, broadly, philosophically speaking, people should have the right to do innocent, good things.
Right. With people their should means. Be able to live their lives in however they want. And, like, a lot of America's best protests and most effective protest movements have involved people spending or not spending money at certain businesses.
Yeah.
So people vote with their wallet pretty effectively, and it's, you know.
Yeah.
It's one thing that, you know, if money is speech and speech is free, you can't tell somebody how they can or even should spend their money. I mean, as long as it's legal, right? I mean, say somebody just wants to withdraw all their money in ones and watch a giant pile of money catch fire. That's, I mean, not good sense, but it's legal.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, can't go buy, you know. Can't go hire an assassin with your money. But see, and that's where it's like, that's where, like, my problem is with, and, you know, like, I know a little bit about, like, the Citizens United case. There's, like, I believe our legal correspondent, which we'll announce a little bit of news later, but our legal correspondent, has brought up that it's actually a pretty good case. Like we may not like it, but the case had a lot of good. It's a well argued case for Citizens United.
Right, there's a relatively. It's a valid argument. I wouldn't necessarily say it's strong, but.
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of real world implications from it that are the argument against it. But and actually, even the videos they made were bullshit. But there is a good free speech, like there's a good like innocent, perfect world free speech argument for it. And, but I mean, the repercussions of that, and even the money, and even by the way, the money in politics before Citizens United was still too much. Like Feingold McCain didn't go far enough.
But no reasonable person could have looked at that case and the way. Like, as somebody like Justice Kennedy looked how they were going to decide it and think, oh, this is going to be fine.
Yeah, I believe that... I should know these things. There was a dissent written by Souter, I think? Oh.
As I recall, that dissent was pretty scathing.
Oh, it was, and it was like, you people, do you know what you're doing?
Like, you have to know, right?
Repercussions of this. Which kind of is actually... A little bit goes back to this whole, you know, Roberts likes to have rulings that are as narrow as possible, yet in Citizens United, they, like, opened up a giant garage door of money.
I mean, I guess it's politics. A button press. It's a button press that opens a garage door, though. It's not like hooking the person next to you for maybe a reaction.
Yeah, I mean, the ruling in Citizens United wasn't like, in this election... people who, you know, make videos about Hillary Clinton are allowed to do that. Like, that wasn't the ruling. It was very broad.
It's like, videos will count as in-kind contributions to the campaign and governed as such under, you know, prevailing campaign finance law instead of overturning McCain-Feingold.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I should say, I think I speak for you, too. It's like, we obviously love free speech.
And Bernie.
So does the dog. That's why I start off. I mean, to me, it's my little nod to free speech. We start off the podcast with, this is an example of speech. And we may be wrong on podcasts. Yeah. I mean, we may be wrong sometimes. We may be, I don't know. I don't think we have, but maybe we've spread some gross... We were grossly negligent and spread some falsities, but you know.
I mean, I guess we're big in Europe, but.
But we're also not, you know, we're also not getting paid to do this shit, you know, and we're not getting paid to change people's minds. Maybe if that starts coming into it, things should be different. I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, one thing I don't think I've seen is. How come there hasn't been attempts to work around... All right, Danny. To work around the Citizens United ruling through legislation?
Because there haven't been nearly enough senators and representatives, or, you know, there hasn't been that kind of a meaningful consensus built around it. Because that's something that would just die in committee, right? I think that's something... They offer at least one or two fixes for it every year in the dying committee.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you're on the Appropriations Committee or any of the other committees, you could easily put something like that up, and even if it's just pro forma and, you know, symbolic, at least somebody tried, right? Hopefully somebody tried. Easy, Bernie.
All right, well, and then let's finish up with, speaking of the, come on, this one should write itself. Speaking of the complicated nature of free speech in today's media landscape, which I don't even know if that's what we were speaking about. Anyway, Slate had an article by Ben Mathis Lilly. Facebook says InfoWars, which reported that NASA has a slave colony on Mars. I don't think you need to add that into the headline. Maybe you do nowadays, I don't know. Is a valid source of, quote, opinion and analysis.
The, I mean, this is one of those things that really make me heave. Like, that guy's valid news and opinion, and I demand some kind of journalistic or some kind of award for not being a fucking lying sack of shit who's only out to enrich.
We should be getting a Peabody for just not being Alex Jones.
Admittedly, that's a low bar, but...
Well... No, okay, and so let's do a little bit of context. Facebook. So remember how Zuckerberg was, like, doing a media blitz a few months ago, testified in front of Congress, and, like, they were all, like, really useless? And, but he was in the hot seat, and he was describing... He was going everywhere between being very defensive about what they've done, talking about how they're going to do things differently, but how everything we have done is just fine, and how he has this, like, utopian vision of the future that's, like, completely revolves around Facebook. It's really creepy.
Right? And he's going to make billions of dollars more, I guess, billions of dollars behind it?
And one of the things he... talked about is how they're gonna redo their news, and so they're gonna try and take a focus off of Facebook about news, and I don't remember the exact ways that they were going to do that, but one of the things they were going to do is essentially kind of categorize different outlets, which is broaching some problems with, you know, like I could see some outlets that maybe we read being categorized not as by Facebook as truthy as, or yeah, let's just say the word truthy, as you and I may think. You know, they might put them into some sort of partisan category. I think Google did something with that a few months ago. That might have been something we talked about in an early episode of the show. And the thing is that instead of just calling InfoWars and Alex Jones, I don't know exactly what they'd call the category, but, you know, just fake news, they are considering it, so here's what their response was. We see pages on both the left and the right pumping out what they consider opinion or analysis, but others call fake news. We believe banning these pages would be contrary to the basic principles of free speech.
But labeling it as news is doing more than just condoning free fucking speech, you fucking hypocritical Neanderthals.
And so then they go on to say how there's going to be some sort of fact-checking thing that they're going to be doing, and users rate things as true or false, and if they get rated things false, like per story, per post, that it will lose future views, which is like getting a little bit Big Brother-y.
That's a little Orwellian.
Yeah, exactly. But, okay, fine. And the reason it becomes Orwellian is because of the loopholes that they are consciously let happen, like InfoWars. Like, if there weren't glaring errors, yeah, it'd be maybe a little more subtly Orwellian, but it'd be like, at least people aren't reading about slave colonies on Mars. You know, there'd be a bright side to it. But yeah. This is like, so they're going to lose 80% of their views if someone... or some sort of fact checker. I don't know who these fact checkers are. They're probably in robes and like chant a lot or something.
I love your image of mathematicians.
Yeah. But anyways, and I say we also demote pages and domains that repeatedly share false news, but obviously they do that a lot. And so I don't know. It's all very confounding.
It's like, yeah, they won't let anybody base... It's the problem with Facebook and why Zuckerberg's appearances were problematic. He basically said, we don't need regulation, we'll be good citizens, but the way you'd be a good citizen would be to at least show people, like, let people peek under the hood. Like some kind of public ombudsman, make sure that your company is above board.
Yeah.
Because, you know, mm-hmm. transparency is sunshine that disinfects all.
I would also say that there is a kind of I think there's probably a lot about Silicon Valley types, the billionaires, the investments, people out there, people like a Zuckerberg and some of, I'm sure, his execs, that is obviously kind of like capitalist conservative. But I am thinking, except for like your rare Peter Thiel, a lot of them are like kind of socially, would consider themselves Democrats. Let's just put it that way. I mean, they've been cozying up to the Democratic Party for years now. It was like the CFO was going to possibly be a high-ranking like cabinet official in Clinton's cabinet. That one lady, I can't remember her name. So, I mean, yeah. There's definitely some ties there. And it seems to me like kind of like how the New York Times is like clearly still befuddled by the far right. After like
the far left.
Well, yeah, sure. But they give attention to the far right.
Mm-hmm.
They give like special privilege to the far right.
Yeah,
and like they keep writing, you know, that's like become cliche at this point. They write these big things where they like interview some racist in Ohio.
Oh my god, I was just about to reference that. It's like, yeah, the lengthy piece about the guy who, I don't even remember. He lost his job.
There's like a neo-Nazi guy.
The neo-Nazi. Like, let's try to understand this like fringe website conspiracy peddling fucking racist? We can say he's racist, right? They said that.
Oh, yeah, that guy's a Nazi. I mean, that guy just was a Nazi.
I mean, yeah, you just have to own the parts of it if you identify as it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that guy would have called himself a racist, I'm pretty sure. Like, he wasn't just, like, a Trump voter. He was racist.
A white supremacist.
Yeah.
I mean,
he was a white supremacist. Yeah. Anyway, I kind of have this... I think the Facebook is a good example of being befuddled by the right. Like, it's kind of the, we have to let both sides talk type thing. Like, we have to have a right person on the right and a person on the left on every panel, you know? Like, CNN shit has been doing for years. And I think the individuals at Facebook probably do not think InfoWars is as trustworthy of an outlet as, say, some far left outlet. Name one.
What, far left outlet?
Yeah.
Naked Capitalism?
Sure.
I mean,
yeah, no, that's fine. So they probably would not, I'm guessing, I don't know this for sure, would probably be more apt to believe something like Naked Capitalism, just on an average random article, just tit for tat. But because they don't understand the right at all, they give them these special privileges that certain aspects of it are not. Like, is Alex Jones even... I know he's, like, right now kind of on the right, but I'm pretty sure there was, like, 10 years ago he was kind of on the left, and, you know, like...
It depends on who's in power.
Yeah, dude's been fucking nuts and crazy for a long time. Like, a long time. Oh, more than that, dude. He was... I mean, he played a crazy person because he was a crazy person. He was maybe more sympathetic of a crazy person. But in one of my favorite movies of all time, Slacker, from, like, 1991.
Wow.
And, yeah, dude's been... He's literally shouting out of a megaphone driving through a quiet neighborhood at dawn. That's what he's doing in that movie.
I remember that.
Oh, it's my favorite. It's one of my favorites. Anyway, And it seems to me that they just can't bring themselves to just call it racist or whatever, fake, because they want to pretend to be giving a difference. And I think it's because they have been attacked by the right for squashing conservative stories on Facebook before, and I think they're afraid of being viewed as even slightly partisan. And in their attempts to not be partisan, they're like, well, we have to allow things on the right. And so they allow goddamn InfoWars, which doesn't make any sense. It's not like it's Fox News, even. Or, you know, it's InfoWars.
Yeah, they're like, oh, man. It's troubling. I can't imagine what Zuckerberg's thinking or anybody at Facebook. You
know, and these assholes go to Harvard and Yale and MIT.
This just goes to show that those people, like, can be an idiot and go to those places. It's those, just because you can get into Harvard doesn't mean you're, like, especially smart in any way. It just means you're connected.
They might be actually. I would push back a slight bit, and I'd say they might be smart in a way, but that doesn't mean they can make necessarily make rational decisions
or positive decisions or beneficial decisions.
Yeah, or have ethics.
Ethics, wow. I'm pretty sure that's not a requirement in the engineering department.
No. And so I just watched this documentary. I finally finished up Dirty Money, which came out 6 months ago. I think I had intended to talk about it on the show. And then
I'll watch it.
I went really slowly through the series. Most of them were good. I could not follow the maple syrup one. It just could follow it. I just didn't get it.
But the oldest grift in America.
No, it's Canada, but Quebec.
Whatever.
Quebecois. The last episode is actually about Trump, and it's just kind of they talked to Walter Schaub, and a couple of reporters that actually I'm aware of and like their stuff. They do good shit. And what I found, sky is falling in a way, type quotes from the show was from this New Yorker writer. Who says one of his big fears is that it's not just that Trump is doing all this corrupt bullshit and got to this place by being a corrupt, lying asshole. It's that this was all made okay. And that future people will be like, I can get away with this. And he's like, because it's not just because the system, the laws, because just because you get away with something doesn't mean you did legal things, right? But there's obviously bias in the who gets prosecuted, when they get prosecuted. Yeah. Judge. Yeah.
Prosecutorial discretion, as it's called.
It's that a huge percentage of Americans seem to lack basic understanding of business media ethics because they voted for him and they constantly defend him. Or the ability to discern a liar, a fairly clear liar.
I'm pretty sure they know that you have to know he's a liar. And
some of them
don't care because he's seemingly getting things done. But that's
because he says he's getting shit done. Though it's like, oh yeah, everyone lies. Okay,
I've broken so many records. I've broken all of Elton John's records.
It's like, so tell me why you think he's doing well. Well, because he said he's doing well. But you also admit he's a liar. It doesn't make any sense.
Circular liar. Yeah, he's circular fuck.
Yeah, no, that's... All right. And on that note, this has been Tell Me What to Think. This has been Closing Thoughts. Hashtag TMWTT is where you can preview all of our stories for the week and suggest future stories. You can also check out our Facebook page. I already put up a couple from our first segment of the show, and we'll put up some of the other articles that we talked about in this episode. You can contact me on Twitter at @BloatedNemesis, Charles on Twitter at @Green_weird, which is WYRD. You can also email the podcast.
Show have its own Twitter handle?
What's that?
The show have its own Twitter handle?
Yeah, I keep thinking about that, but I realize I wouldn't use it. I don't know, how do you use that? That's so.
I mean, you just kind of tweet out the same stories that were. I don't know.
Maybe
you use it for publicity, but yeah.
Anyway. I don't know how it would be better than just my and your account. I don't know. I'm sure it is, and I just haven't figured out why. But it keeps dawning on me that that's the type of thing everyone else does. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
thanks for listening.
In case I didn't finish it was WYRD, green_weird, WYRD. Email podcast at TMWTTPOE@gmail.com. Do all the things on all the platforms, stoneduckmedia.com, all of that. Everyone have a good week. I think I will be off next week, so I think there will be no episode. That's
my
green weird though. Put the pressure on him, folks. Put the pressure on him. I hope everyone can catch me up on the happenings in the world in a couple weeks. Have a good night, Charles.
You too.
Alright,
today's a sunny, today's a rain. Destroy the myth that will break our chains.
break your chains.